What do you do when you serve more than one master? I am forever being pulled left to right, right to left, forwards and backwards when it comes to listening to music. It's a very welcomed problem. I love rock and roll so much, I play in a rock and roll band, make rock music, and play rock and roll shows for a living. It was a way not to just get close to the music, but submerge myself in it 24 hours a day. And this has been going on now for 19 years. I'm very grateful for being able to do so. I don't take it for granted, and I love what I do, but there is always a forefinger tapping me on the shoulder, reminding me that there is another music I pledged to long time ago and continue to do so to this day that asks for equal attention. Metal music is something that I became a card-carrying fan of when I was a little kid, and although I've gone on through many phases where I ignored it and gave up on it, metal music never stopped winning me back to its fold over and over again. And long ago, came to terms with the fact that heavy metal is in my DNA. It will always be something I listen to and follow. There's really no turning back now. However, when you have varied musical tastes, the reality of the music world doesn't really match up. The music business and its music scene is largely dictated by the so-called expertise of record labels, radio, music journalists, and their impressionable followers and fans who all employ, whether they realize it or not, strict guidelines as to who and what to like, compartmentalizing it neatly into categories, never letting the different musics associate alongside each other for too long. Hard music, heavy music, is largely seen as lowbrow and tucked away because of it, usually late at night, off peak hours, and in the back pages, almost like an afterthought, almost like an embarrassment. And when I become the butt of someone's joke due to the music I play, I know immediately the twisted design self-appointed music pundits have constructed is having its effect and influence on simpletons. Nothing to worry too much about, but it is annoying having to deal with these boneheads who got into music 3-4 years ago and now consider themselves experts, directing their half-informed jeers my way. If only having a wide musical palette could be seen as an asset. Maybe then the industry can start to change and become more open to other forms of music, become more open to heavy music, rather than keeping restricted access to what is deemed cool. And even within the snubbed genre of hard and heavy music lies the unspoken restrictions placed on its members by its members. Many times when people have found out I like metal, they are genuinely surprised. How can someone who likes Kiss and the Stooges like Dark Throne and Opeth? Sounds ridiculous that there should even be a gap to build a bridge, but the answer is easy. I listen to what my ears tell me is good rather than what everyone else tells me is good, and I go from there. Stuck in the same predicament as myself, but on the other side of the fence, is Soilwork singer and frontman Bjorn Strid. Soilwork are a death metal band from Helsingborg, Sweden, and with 9 albums under their belt, they have achieved what most bands only dream of. Now, in their 20th year as a band, they are, as of this podcast, in the studio working on their 10th album. But whether people realize it or not, Strid has another band, and that band has a completed 2nd album ready to be unleashed onto the world. The Night Flight Orchestra, a 5-piece AOR classic rock-inspired project, not just showcases Strid's talent as a songwriter and singer, but can very well be the only contemporary outfit of its kind, forgoing the usual Sabbath-Zeppelin mélange and opting for a classic rock checklist made up of underused acts like Asia, Toto, Styx, and Foreigner, alongside quintessential acts like Deep Purple and Kiss. What makes the Night Flight Orchestra stand out is how much they flawlessly nail that AOR sound from the 70s and 80s, a sound so rarely attempted these days. This past December, a little after Christmas, I got a chance to hang out with another Bjorn, Bjorn Gelott of In Flames, who spent his holidays in Toronto, and it was inevitable that we would eventually get together and jam. Streed was also present at the Ashtabula Jam, and it became quickly apparent that the screaming and death metal vocals he's known for are merely one part of his repertoire. That night, I drove Streed home, and he played me the new Night Flight Orchestra. I was nervous to listen to it with him present in the car. It's always very nerve-wracking to listen to someone else's record with them in the room. It's a situation that can turn awkward very fast when it becomes evident the record is terrible. I'm not very good at feigning enthusiasm and prefer to disappear rather than lie. But after the first 30 seconds of the first song, Sail On, my mind wasn't just put to ease, it got really excited. Here we were, not even into 2015, and I might have already found my favorite album of the year. Track after track made me drive slower and slower as to prolong the listening session. Of course, this made me want to sit down with Streed for a more in-depth discussion on the Night Flight Orchestra. Luckily for me, Streed spends a lot of time in Toronto and was able to snag him a day before he was to leave back to Sweden. Skyline Whispers is the name of the second album by Night Flight Orchestra, a band that features David Anderson of Soilwork and Charlie D'Angelo of Archenemy. The album will be released sometime this April, and if this talk of ours gets your curiosity piqued, track it down. It will be well worth the search. I'd like to thank Blue Mic Microphones for their Yeti mics and Skull Candy headphones for their Aviator headphones. Thanks to you for listening to this podcast. Every time I meet someone at a show or somewhere, I'm told that they're listening to the podcast. It's really cool. So it's nice to know I'm not just talking into a mic by myself in my room. So thank you to all out there. Please leave a rating or a review in the various iTunes stores too. Thanks a lot for that. Okay, onward with the episode. Bjorn Streed is this episode's guest on the official Danko Jones podcast, and it starts now. The Danko Jones podcast is the best around. Nick Flanagan is Danko's co-hosted love for free. I'm so glad I like you sometimes. Jimmy in from fucked up. Stop playing. Hang down, down. The googly gaggly goblins will make sure they get their podcast fill by listening to Danko Jones, then snacking on some broken bones. And scaredy cats will run amok when rock and roll starts to talk, flapping gums and striking tongues. A chilly podcast has now begun.
The Danko Jones podcast is simply superb, splendidly fine, wonderfully wild, very divine.
This podcast that we're doing today was birthed a couple of weeks back before New Year's when we were, you and I got together with Bjorn from In Flames, and we jammed on some covers with Ashtabula.
Yeah.
In somewhere across town, far, far away from me.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. It was really close to the airport.
Yeah.
That I know.
And that's not my neck of the woods, man. I like to stay far away from airports as possible. I'm around them enough.
Yeah.
One of the selling points for Soilwork is the fact that you can scream and growl as much as you can sing. And you can it varies from one line to the next almost, but it's always under a metal setting, obviously, because Soilwork is a metal band. But the first cover we did, I think, was Man on the Silver Mountain, Rainbow, and I immediately felt like, okay, now I'm. What is this, a competition now? This guy's ripping this up. I was expecting like you were like gonna do it haphazardly and stop and everybody have a laugh, because that's what it was. It was just us jamming together in a room.
Well, I didn't know what was gonna come out. Seriously, I've never done that song before, and I don't know. I was kind of nervous. too. I don't know. I just decided to go for it. And I guess it was pretty decent. Yeah.
Yeah, and you were like, "Yeah, I'll do Rainbow. I'll do this song.
I'll do Rainbow."
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, I felt like saying what the thought passed my head for a second. You know, people don't do Rainbow, man. You should stay away from all that Dio stuff. Yeah. Like that's just gonna be comedic.
Yeah.
But we're jamming here. Let's just have a laugh, sure. And then you ripped it out, and I was like, oh, it's gonna be like this now. Me and Bjorn can go head to head now. but then I drove you home, and then you started playing me Night Flight. And you told me about this project a couple of years back.
Yeah, I think I did, yeah.
Yeah.
And I probably mentioned that it's stuff that, you know, bands are not really doing nowadays. Like, if bands are getting together to do, like, a 70s project, it's usually, like, early 70s bell-bottoms kind of thing, you know, where it's more, like, groovy, and this is more, like, how can I say... it sounds like it's more on cocaine than pot.
Yeah.
Not saying that we are doing any cocaine whatsoever. I'm just saying, like, the actual sound, like
that 80s cocaine synthetic.
Yeah. There's a certain more luxurious feeling over it, which I don't know, maybe it doesn't sound very appealing to people, but to me that's like the part of the 70s, like the late 70s and the early 80s that really appeals to me, that was like made on coke,
you know. Yeah. I totally understand. I think a lot of people understand what you mean. And I think I'm gonna play a few tracks during the podcast just so people know what we're talking about, because I really want to focus in on Night Flight Orchestra.
Cool.
I think it's called Skyline Whispers, and it's your second album.
Yes.
So I was sleeping on the first one, but that night I drove you home, I got an exclusive preview, track for track, with you sitting there. And then you told me, I'll play the new, you know, Night Flight. And I'm like, this could go really badly, because when, you know, the person who made the music is in front of you, waiting for your opinion, it can get awkward when you really deep down inside don't like it.
Yeah.
And so... you know, track after track, I was giving you my honest opinion. I thought it was phenomenal. The fact that, you know, you go for this era and you nail it. You nailed the era, man. You know, the Karate Kid, you know, don't when he's winning the tournament.
Winner Takes It All.
Winner Takes It All. That Joe Esposito song, or like... Man in Motion, John Parr, like St. Elmo's Fire. Elmo's Fire!
Yeah.
And a couple of other songs. Asia.
Yeah.
That's another band that maybe people, you know, where do they sit in the lexicon of rock? Because they're still classified as a rock band.
Yeah.
You can say pop band, but they're really a rock band. Don't we have enough Sabbath, like... acolytes, you know, there's enough bands.
That's what I feel, and I mean, that's what I also wanted to do with this band. Not saying, because I do love Sabbath and a lot of the early 70s as well, but for me, like, bands like Foreigner and like Boston are way more important, because of the melodies and kind of like the energy. It's a different kind of energy than the early 70s. Not saying that I like trippy parts in music as well, like progressive rock. I do like that. But when it's like more like bigger melodies with like a lot of, you know, harmonies, backups in the chorus, and it's really good singers, you know, we don't really see those anymore, you know, doing that kind of rock, like late 70s rock, like Lou Gramm, Foreigner, he's like my absolute favorite singer from that era, I would say, you know.
Yeah,
there's others, for sure, but he's definitely one of them, you know. Nobody can really sing like that anymore.
The new dude from Foreigner, we played with Foreigner last year.
Oh, Kelly...
whoever that...
Kelly Hansen? Yeah, I think...
that guy nails it.
He is really good, and sorry for not mentioning that, because that is true.
He's amazing. And he is amazing, not only voice, but like look and image and he's presence.
He's a rock star.
I'm like, yeah, he's a rock star that everybody should
in the true sense of the word.
Like, should have known.
Yeah.
He's like kind of Steven Tyler meets like not David Lee Roth, but that kind of front man.
Yeah.
In Foreigner. He's got the look and the performance.
Yeah.
I was surprised when we
we
played with them, and it was us, then Foreigner, then Def Leppard. If you can believe that happened. In Quebec City.
Awesome is that? Congrats.
It's pretty cool that happened. I'm a early Def Leppard fan myself. Mm-hmm. I'm not that big of a Foreigner fan.
Right.
But if anybody knows, like on Pyromania,
mm-hmm.
I think it's called Action Not Words. So I had to do it. I go, I said welcome to my show. I did it on stage.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think half the crowd got it at that point.
that's awesome.
But I think Lou, you know, how many albums did Foreigner sell? Like 20 million, 50
yeah,
million?
Yeah, like crazy amounts.
And yet you never hear, no matter how many rock guys you talk to, say, Lou Graham is one of my favorite singers.
No, that's
time.
True, yeah.
And there's no irony in your statement. This
no,
is for
definitely
real.
Not. No, I love him. Like, I mean, obviously, I will have other favorite singers from other types of music, right? I have a lot of favorite singers, but he's like probably the like number one when it comes to that genre, you know, of music.
Yeah, but then the album itself doesn't just sit in that era. It veers a little back and forth. There's tracks that sound like. My favorite track is one of the more rocking tracks, Lady Jade, I think it was.
Yeah.
That track is, like, that's one of the greatest, like, contemporary, like, kind of harken back, throwback tracks around right now that everybody will hopefully hear when this album gets released. It's fucking phenomenal. And then there's other tracks, I don't know the names offhand, but there's one that sounds like Kiss meets Grand Funk Railroad.
Yeah.
Another one sounds like Thin Lizzy a little bit.
Yeah.
Then there's a couple that sound like Purple. One sounds like Whitesnake.
Yeah.
But that's it, the Whitesnake that incorporated so much keyboards that it does actually fit in that 80s era.
Yeah, it's like slide it in sort of maybe.
Come and Get It, Saints.
Yeah, coming maybe a little bit earlier. Yeah.
Well, I nailed the song. If you remember, I was in the car going, What's that Whitesnake song?
Yeah.
It's off that fucking album. And so it's Don't Break My Heart Again.
Oh, here we go.
It's like, dun, 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 dun,
and dun, dun, love, dun, dun, dun. I love that.
And like, what's that Journey song? Is it Separate Ways, maybe?
Yeah.
It's got those like, the keyboards with the keytars and the drums just make it like this trudging, stomping, you know, it's amazing.
Which and is straight bass and then like work around it with the keyboards. I just love that.
So who's in the band?
Well, we have David Anderson, who's also in Soil Work playing guitar.
Okay, because the guitar work is pretty stellar.
Yeah, he is absolutely fantastic. And he came into Soil Work around 2006. He started touring with us as a session guitarist when we were looking for a new one. And later on, he joined the fold permanently. When we started touring together, especially when we toured in North America, we bonded over like classic rock. We just had like a classic rock hour in the back lounge every day and bonded over so many bands, right? And it was really a great feeling meeting somebody who understood what I meant, you know, when going through all those songs. And because there are other guys in the band of Soil Work that enjoys classic rock, but not half as much as I do. They're usually more into like newer stuff, or like Dirk is pretty much like strictly death metal. He loves like old school death metal, the drummer Dirk. And, you know, for example, Flink, he listens to country and Mastodon pretty much. I think that kind of sums it up in a sense. And Sven, keyboard player, is into more, you know, Aphex Twin, He also, you know, Meshuggah, stuff like that. More into like obscure stuff. So it's mostly me who's into that kind of like, even like early Toto and stuff like that. I absolutely love, you know. And Bobby Kimball is another fave of mine for sure. So it was actually cool that, you know, Dave joined the fold and that we bonded so much over classic rock. And that's when we started talking about creating a band, doing stuff like that, you know. And that's when we got in touch with, because we knew that Charlie D'Angelo from Arch Enemy and Spiritual Beggars, that he was really, you know, the right bass player for that kind of stuff, because we knew he was really into that. And so we asked him and he was like, yeah, let's go. And I had a friend back home, Richard Larson, who I've known him for probably 15 years, and he's an amazing keyboard player, fantastic. Like, and he comes from that whole old school kind of AOR world.
Yeah.
So we just felt that, you know, that's definitely the perfect guy for it. And then on drums, David had a childhood friend that he said, like, we need to get this guy to play drums. He's amazing. He's Bonham and more.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, I mean, the musicianship is stellar. But for me, what I zeroed in on was the songwriting. Just like putting myself in that position, going, would I be able to pull this off if I had to? And I don't think I could write that kind of music. Hmm. And then also being a singer, in quotes, listening to your vocals, knowing what you do in your real, well, not real band, but your full-time band, the band that everybody knows you for. You are probably the most underrated, overlooked, versatile, overall heavy, hard singer in music today.
Wow.
I have to tell you that.
Well, I don't know what to say. Thank you for saying that.
Because there's guys, you know, who can rip it out. I mean, I think it's insane that you do that. And the melodic voice always kind of hearken to, you know, maybe there is another side to them. Mm. But they usually tend to go in the kind of like adult contemporary singer-songwriter. Oh, he can sing a nice soft song. But this is like, you know, David Coverdale, fucking Steve Perry. This is like a part of rock that is not forgotten, but cast aside.
Yeah.
It's like the dirty secret that us, you know, everybody wants rock. The rockers want rock to be known for Sabbath and Zeppelin and you know, heavy and hard and macho and you know, just searing guitar solos and get the fucking keyboards out unless they can just like be really back in the mix.
I agree. And I think some of those bands are not even being taken very seriously nowadays. You know, it's more like a joke. It's more like an ironic thing you put on. You
definitely.
Know, in a bar. Oh, remember this song? And it's, you know, and it's always Don't Stop Believing, obviously. And then, you know, it's like, oh, remember these guys? And it's kind of like an ironic feel to it, you know? But there's definitely fans out there, so I'm not going to, you know, say that everyone is being ironic about it. You know, they definitely have a...
Well, the people who aren't, you know, then you look at them and you're like, oh, my God, this is... You're just out of a... You never left that era.
Yeah.
You know, and they become the joke. The audience is almost the joke.
Yeah.
Now, did you find that you could do Night Flight Orchestra now because you've got Soil Work under your belt? You've got this macho thing. You've got this heavy thing under your belt.
Yeah.
Now you can...
Well, I don't know if I ever was, you know, was worried about anything like that. You know, what I'm seeming like, what kind of guy, you know. Because I never really play the macho card in Soul Work either, you know, especially in interviews. I'm pretty like I open up my heart, and sometimes a little bit too much, I feel. You know, I'm not, you know, I talk about panic anxiety, I talk about whatever, you know, I don't really have anything to hide, and maybe I should sometimes, I don't know. But I never had to play that card, I feel. You know, I am a big guy, you know, I'm shaved, and I guess for some people I look sort of intimidating, but you know, I'm a pretty nice guy. You know, I can get pissed off for sure, but I am also a very nice guy, definitely nicer than I look. So no, I don't think I ever had to, you know, play that card,
right?
But it's a lot easier to not having to throw everything in at the same time, all my influences into soul work anymore, because before we had all this, like, okay, I want to get that melody in there, and that reminds me of Foreigner, and then it's like, oh, you know, and I love, for example, like Behemoth and this and that, like, I wanted everything in there, you know, and if, for the most time, it actually worked to me. I mean, we've done some good stuff, you know, mm-hmm. stuff that I'm proud of, yeah. But now that I've been doing Night Flight, you know, I have all those things in there, you know, I got Foreigner, I got Boston, I got Fleetwood Mac, which is another absolute favorite of mine, and you know, especially Stevie Nicks. So that's all in there, and now I can just, like, I want soul work to be pretty damn brutal, you know, because that is a part of me as well. I like metal, I am a metal guy as well, even though I'm sometimes a little bit more of a rocker.
It's an interesting meeting of the minds between you and I think, because I'm a rock guy,
yeah.
But I love metal,
yeah.
And you're known for as a metal guy, but you love rock, so it's an interesting thing.
Yeah.
I would never take on metal though. I don't think I would do a metal project.
Why?
Because I think it's just too hard. I don't have the chops, and also I want to remain a fan.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
And
yeah.
Keep the music mysterious.
Yeah.
So, in that sense, has your fandom grown for rock, or is it overtaking the metal side now that this is kind of up and up and ready to go?
Well, since that's, you know, that's what I do most of the time. I tour with soil work, you know, I perform metal, which I still love. I love to write and perform metal. With that being said, I can't really say that I listen as much to metal as I used to. And I don't want to be, you know, cynical about it. It's like there's no good stuff coming out anymore. I mean, there probably is. I'm just not finding it, and I'm not putting in the effort. And I guess that shows a little bit of you know, where my interest lies, you mm-hmm. know, in a sense. But then again, if I find, like, a new, like, a metal band coming out with this crazy good record, you know, I'm all over it, you know, and I will promote it in any way I can, you know. And, you know, At the Gates, for example, they just released, like, a killer record, you know, it's 20 years later, pretty much, mm-hmm. since they released Slaughter of the Soul. And it's not going to have the same effect on me, you know. Let's be honest about it. I mean, I bought the Slaughter of the Soul as soon as it came out, and it blew my mind, you know. And the new one blows my mind as well, but in a different way.
Yeah, okay? Yeah, definitely.
It's not the same thing. It's just as good, but it's a different feeling. I'm 20 years older, and I'm sure it's different for them too, you know. So it's...
Oh, I mean, the albums that you, when you were younger... that you found and you loved, I mean, I used to listen to on repeat. I wouldn't budge. But now when I find an album that I really love and a band that I really love, it's not to that extreme.
Yeah, because I mean, thinking back, I do remember, like, coming home from school, and especially in junior high, I had this everyday routine. Coming home from school, I had, like, you know, a little bit of a snack in the afternoon, and then I went to bed. I fell asleep to Dissection, Storm of the Lights. That was my favorite thing to do. And I was just, like, taking a nap and, like, falling asleep to that, you know, to black or death metal. That was my favorite thing to do. And it was so soothing. And I can't take naps anymore today. I'm terrible. I can't take a nap. It doesn't work. I don't fall asleep.
Yeah, I can't take naps either.
No.
Unless I'm sick. That's different.
So that's what I actually try to think of when I go to bed at night and how, you know, I have a hard time to sleep. I think back when I'm on my bed in my childhood room, listening to Dissection in the afternoon, feel the sun coming in from the window, and that noise in the background, and like feeling, you know, so good about it, and it's very soothing. That's what I try to think about when I try to fall asleep.
You know, that sounds psychotic.
I know. It does. But it worked, at least back then.
But yeah, no, I hear you. Yeah, my routine, when I think back in my head, I just remember, like, I would listen to Rain and Blood. It would take me an hour. I'd listen to it four times a day.
Yeah.
Because it's an hour to go to school, so
yeah.
It was half an hour. Or Sabotage by Black Sabbath. I just remember I didn't have all that money. It's not the internet days where you can just grab an album or any album you want to buy. You can find it.
Yeah.
I didn't have any money, and you couldn't find them.
No, so it was whatever a quest, I could, yeah, you know?
Whatever I could find is what I ended up listening to a lot of. Mm. You know, so these days the amount of music that is at your fingertips and that is being released more than ever before. I mean, it's just it's like a river of just constant albums being thrown at you.
It's way too easy.
Yeah, so it's harder to zone in on one and just have that one album be the one album you're going to listen to for the whole year.
Yeah.
I find I don't have enough time to listen to everything. But I've since given Night Flight Orchestra about four or five listens.
Yeah.
Not just because I knew we were going to meet up and talk, but also because I wanted to, like, totally remember what I heard in the car.
Yeah.
And compare it to, was it as good as it was that night because Bjorn was in the car with me and we were talking about it? But it really is an exceptional album. I find it to be, and right out of the 2015 gates, I find it to be a real front runner for at least my top 10. I hope everyone else gets a chance to hear it. Do you guys have plans on releasing it this year, and where and how?
Well, we're currently on a small label in Italy, Corner Records, which I'm really grateful that they, you know, wanted to sign us, because it wasn't as easy as we thought, you know, finding a label for this kind of thing. And it's like, we approach so many labels, and I mean, I guess we have a selling point, you know, in me and David being in the band, but also Charlie D'Angelo, which, you know, who's in a huge band, Arch Enemy, and, you know,
And Charlie's great. I've met him a few times.
Yes, he's fantastic. He's
a really nice guy.
Funny another, as hell.
Another guy who is nicer than he looks.
Yes.
He could be very intimidating to approach, I think.
Yeah, I agree. So it's been hard to find a label, and people just don't get it, you know. Yeah. And I thought everyone would get it. And it's like, wow, I'm actually doing something here that not a lot of people are getting. But it's like, come on, don't you hear this, you know? And then you have certain people like Monty Connor, who's the biggest fan ever of this band, and he was trying so hard, you know, to find labels to sign this, so hard. But most people don't understand it, and I guess the selling point with me, David, and Charlie being from those bands disappear because it has nothing to do with metal. But in a way, I think it does. It's not metal, but it, you know, it influenced me and my band, you know, for years, and I guess people just can't make that connection, you know. And I, then again, most labels out there now, they only sign, if you sound 70s, we want you to sound like Led Zeppelin or Sabbath, you know, that kind of style. So I guess that's where it's at right now.
It's interesting when you talk to there's a few different kinds of, like, people who are into metal, and I'm very critical of metalheads. I feel like can be, because I consider myself to be one. But I think there's the people who are rabidly into metal, who just got it, but then you find out they're the ones who just got into metal, maybe 5 years or less.
Yeah.
And that is what defines them. That is who they are.
Yeah.
And there's just no budging. Then there's people who've been into metal for a long, long time, a long enough time to know that it's not the only kind of music. And what you find, and I find this especially in Scandinavia, is the the more the metalhead, the more they're a rock fan. Like, and it goes deep with their rock fandom.
Yeah.
The way it does for you. You almost define this category. And that is what I feel someone who's confident with being a music fan knows what they want. They're real music fans because they just listen to, they just follow what their ears tell them, not what their eyes tell them.
Yeah.
And I think lot of these labels who have said no to you guys are just, they just can only, they, I don't, I question if they're even music fans and how far deep does their music love go. I mean, you got to be deaf not to know that. Okay, so you don't like what is it, Lady Stiletto or Living in the Midnight or whatever?
Living for the Nighttime.
Living for the Nighttime. Yeah, yeah. Track two, track three.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't like some of those more kind of 80s synth ones.
Yeah.
But dude, there's enough Purple and enough Kiss and Grand Funk for you to go, okay, I can make the bridge there.
Yeah.
For me, I love that. I love the kind of the 80s synthy, more synthy stuff you do.
The montage-oriented stuff.
Just wash me with that stuff. Like, I want to bathe in that stuff. I love it. And we started talking about, like more stuff beyond that in the car, like Tangerine Dream and all that kind of stuff. And, I think sometimes, you know, you got to take music fans or lovers of music or so-called lovers of music by the hand. Or sometimes they just need to you need to wait and they need to like catch up. But this is maybe, as much as it harkens back to an era that's what, 30 years old, it's ahead of the game in 2015. It's so fucked to say, but and it's a sad comment that you guys are actually ahead of the game.
I guess in a sense. And I've seen people saying that it's like, oh, it sounds so like retro, but it sounds refreshing at the same time, which is kind of interesting, like how
it is, I guess.
Yeah, maybe because people haven't really heard that stuff for a while, and if you hear it, it's just like straight up AOR with some singer from that band and guitarist from that band. It's a project, and it's released on Frontiers Records, you know.
But it makes it palatable, I think, for contemporary listeners like myself, when it's not straight from the 80s going, oh, we found this lost gem, because there is that connection in that bridge between these, you know, cool bands that made it cool.
Yeah.
You know, so that's also something that I think labels would have enough keen sense to capitalize on. I mean, I wrote you like, I think a day or two later going, dude, this is like, I fucking totally meant what I said in the car. Yeah. Like,
and I felt that.
Yeah, I was just like, I can't believe, like, I would be so overcome by jealousy of you and your vocal abilities if I wasn't so genuinely impressed by this project. I'm like, there comes a point with me when someone impresses me to the point where it's like, well, like, there's just no catching up. Okay. Just join their club and be done with it.
Right.
And that's where I found myself. Like, wow, you really, wow, this is awesome. Because I just had heard you nail Man on the Silver Mountain like an hour before. So, and that's another thing. You don't warm up.
No.
That's something you told me years ago that I remember.
Yeah.
Like you're some sort of freak.
I don't know. I just never really warmed. I did see a vocal coach for a while who taught me some of the chops, but that was more like a confirmation thing for me. It's like, yes, Bjorn, you can sing. And it's like, oh, he said it. Now I can move on, you know?
But you don't go, like before the show?
Or... No, and it's actually a funny story because I got sick. That's the only thing that can stop me on tour, if I get sick. And I did get sick, and we were in Iowa somewhere, and my voice was pretty much gone. And I could still sing a little, You know, it was like, oh, maybe I should actually warm up for change, you know. And I did, and actually sounded worse after that. So maybe if your vocal cords are not, you know, used to that, you're just, I don't know. I guess I'm doing everything right when I sing then. I don't know. I don't know any. I mean, I do vocal coaching with people on tour, you know, and I try to explain to them what I do, but it's really hard.
You know? Do vocal coaching with other people?
Yeah, like, you know, fans.
Oh, basically. I see.
I've done that, you know, a couple of runs, you know, that, you know, people can contact me and come to the venue in the afternoon, and I, you know, teach them what I know.
What do you know if you don't warm up?
Well, I tell them, like, what I think is key, you know, how to make your voice stronger, for example. What I've been doing, you know, but it doesn't mean that it's going to work for them. I can only tell them what I know and what I've done. And I've been working a lot on my falsetto, for example. I think that's the key to build up a strong falsetto is the key to a lot of singing.
Voice.
Yeah. And I also claim that even if you're doing screamy vocals, I think, you know, to become a good screamer, you need to become a decent, like, normal singer as well. I think you can hear that.
Michael Ackerfeld is another guy who can do both.
Because he can bite the words off. And I feel that I've always, well, not always, but I've been becoming a lot better at enunciating the words. You can really hear what I'm saying, even though I'm screaming. And I think that's really important. And that's one thing that I'm really sick of. I can't listen to metal with a singer that I can't hear what he's saying. Unless it's something really brutal and it becomes more like an effect.
Mm-hmm.
Like an instrument and not like telling a story. Because I believe you can tell a story in brutal death metal as well.
Right.
Know? And I want to hear what the guy's saying.
You're like, the fact that you don't warm up and sing the way you do in Soil Work, you're kind of like that skinny person who eats whatever the hell they want. I just eat chocolate bars and potato chips. What? You don't work out?
No. I know.
And the fact that you don't get sleep on tour, or enough sleep, or more than...
Well, if I'm in a tour bus, I'm usually fine. It's more when we do flying shows, so to speak, and you know, there's a lobby call 6 a.m. and I get really stressed over getting enough sleep, because you usually come to a hotel around midnight and it's like, okay guys, see you in the lobby in 5 hours. It ain't gonna happen for me. It ain't gonna happen.
Really?
Yeah, and it's like when we toured Japan, we did Loud Park in October. The night before, I slept maybe 20 minutes. And I was twisting and turning all night long. Could not fall asleep. And then we had that very, you know, super important show. Like a return to Japan. We haven't been there for a while. And we used to go there a lot, like every albums. You know, so... But I didn't get any sleep and still pulled it off, and that was fine. You know, it was all adrenaline, you know, and I think that's a very important thing. If you don't have that, you can't do anything. So it's, but I mean, I don't warm up. There are times when I just put my tongue behind like the lower teeth and kind of stretch the vocal cords, and that's about it, you know.
Wow.
And maybe you loosen up the neck. That's,
That's the equivalent of, like, I don't know, I just eat about 5 bags of potato chips a day at McDonald's.
Yeah, but then again, I got that kissed, right? And I mean, if I go into, like, a convenience store and look at a Snickers bar, I gain 20 pounds, you know? So I don't have that, but I got that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and you're here in Toronto. I mean, when you're in Sweden, because it's interesting as well, when you're in Sweden, where are you?
In the very south. No, it's close to Helsingborg.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is close to Malmo.
Right.
Which you're familiar with.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. So, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And then you split your time here in Toronto, because I see you at shows every now and then.
Yeah.
There are always Swedish bands, Swedish death metal.
Yeah.
Like, oh, there's Bjorn again, of course.
Hello.
I think when you told me about Night Flight was at a show.
Probably.
Was at the Michael Monroe show with Dragon on guitar.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's when I remembered it. And for some reason, the way you described it to me, I was like, oh, this will be exciting.
Yeah.
So that's how I held on to the project in my head.
Yeah.
I just couldn't remember the name. That's
right.
Why. I'm happy to just have my bands that I like, and if people like them or not, that's I don't care.
Yeah.
So, but I one of those bands now is Night Flight Orchestra.
You're just living for the nighttime, aren't you?